Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. A mortar round has detonated inside the grounds of the U.S. Embassy in Monrovia, Liberia. A lieutenant commander for the U.S. Navy said the general store was hit. No injuries were reported. Earlier, at least 20 mortar bombs smashed into the diplomatic quarter close to the embassy compound as rebels renewed their fight against forces loyal to Liberian President Charles Taylor. Meanwhile, 41 American Marines are on their way to Liberia. Their job will be to reinforce security at the U.S. embassy there and prepare the ground for a possible evacuation of U.S. citizens. Deadly attacks against coalition forces in Iraq are not the work of Saddam Hussein loyalists, as the U.S. has claimed. That contention was made today by a group of Iraqi militants. The masked men told Abu Dhabi television that the attacks are being carried out by Islamists rather than fighters pledged to Saddam Hussein. An American soldier and an Iraqi interpreter were killed today when they were ambushed on a highway in northern Baghdad. While American losses continue to climb almost daily, Illinois Congressman John Shimkus says America must be vigilant.
We need to continue to aggressively weed out the last vestiges of the Saddam Hussein regime and the thugs that he had. We're still trying to hold on. We got to get him, we got to get his sons, and then I think the attacks will slowly wither away.
The best friend of Kobe Bryant's accuser has come out to defend her friend. Starlene Bray was watching Bryant's press conference last Friday with the accuser and says her friend became sick to her stomach after seeing Bryant on TV.
She seemed really distraught and just kind of ill.
Bray says her friend was upset at seeing Bryant, but at the same time she was relieved that he was being charged. She also said that there is physical evidence that her friend was being victimized. On Wall Street this hour, the Dow was down 60 points, NASDAQ down 27, and S&P down 11 points.
Hey, Larry, baby, you want to go for a ride?
Why, Vince, I didn't know you cared.
I don't, but I'm looking for a baby.
But, Vince, we're crash dummies.
Well, your head's about the size of a baby. What are you doing? Taking it off! I'm using your head in a rear-facing infancy.
Why?
To show how babies up front are in airbag danger.
You know I get sick when I ride backwards and without a body.
Up in front, kids won't know what hit them when the airbag blows.
Then why do people put their kids up front, Vince?
I don't know. Maybe it makes them feel better to see them sitting by their side. Although, if my baby looked like you, he'd ride in the truck.
And where are we going, Vince?
Yeah, you know that brick wall with the big bullseye?
I can see it vaguely in the back of my mind.
Well, in 2 seconds, that's exactly where it's going to be. Holy cow, Larry, you're embedded in the seat.
Sorry,
I can't understand you. I'll go get a tire iron.
Thank you.
You could learn a lot from a dummy. Buckle your kids in the back seat. A message from the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
No criminal charges will be brought against Cardinal Bernard Law and other leaders of the Boston Catholic Archdiocese in connection with the clergy sex abuse scandal. The Massachusetts Attorney General's office says no state laws were violated when accused priests were moved by the church from parish to parish as part of an alleged cover-up of child sex abuse. Researchers say an extramarital affair is as easy as a touch of a key for many married people. Scientists at the University of Florida say internet chat rooms are the fastest growing cause of relationship breakdown. They add that the problem will only get worse with an estimated 649 million internet users around the world.
Hi, Tom Baudet with a memo to corporate CEOs. Looks like all those accounting shenanigans to make your company look profitable weren't such a great idea. Well, all you had to do was stay at Motel 6. While you don't get the thrill of cooking those books, you do get a clean, comfortable room for the lowest price of any national chain. Of course, the other methods will get you a room too, but it has bars on it and you're not allowed to leave. I'm Tom Baudet from Motel 6 and we'll leave the light on for you. And a core hotel.
29 Philadelphia area students are retracing the Freedom Ride of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Tom McDonald reports the aim is to keep them in school.
C. Dolores Tucker of the Martin Luther King Association for Nonviolence says taking students on the same freedom ride that Dr. King traced back in the 60s gives them an incentive to stay in the classroom.
And what they're saying is, if we didn't have this program, they would be in the street, and they would be learning that it's not cool to go to school.
The students will travel to the nation's capital, Memphis, Tennessee, Selma, Alabama, Montgomery, Alabama, Tuskegee, Alabama, and Atlanta, Georgia, before returning to Philadelphia on July 29th. Tom McDonald, Philadelphia.
And Humpty Dumpty didn't take a great fall in Colorado Springs, but he did disappear. Officials say the 200-pound statue was on display as part of a street art exhibit. But even though he was bolted down, thieves made off with the statue sometime over the weekend. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi,
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. It's raining cats and dogs. You're slowing down, being careful, but you hit a wet patch, and there you go, hydroplaning. Now, what causes it, and what can you do about it? When we come back, I'll tell you.
Asphalt, rubber, metal, speed. This is Racing for Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Matt Kenseth, and Christian Fittipaldi. There's one more key to racing, Champion Spark Plugs. They race different makes of cars, Chevy, Dodge, Ford, but they all trust Champion because they all have the same destination, the winner's circle. Champion powers all.
Be sure to ask your service technician or auto parts retailer for Champion Spark Plugs.
When tires meet road water, they can do two things. Channel the water and remain on pavement, or skim on top of the water. Hydroplaning occurs when tires, especially bald ones, ride on a wedge of water and lose contact with the road. Your car is literally skiing in the street. When this happens, take your foot off the gas, but don't brake. Braking can cause your car, and sometimes you, to spin out of control. But the best way to hedge against hydroplaning is to equip your car with well-treaded tires. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program today. A marvelous day. It's 6 minutes after noon. This is the Tom Hartman program, speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast in the United States, also broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, covering North and Central America from Alaska to the equator, and streaming audio on the Internet with listeners from Europe to Asia. You can find our web links, the live stream, actually, at radiopower.org or ieamericaradio.com. There are archives at whiterosesociety.org. If you'd like to drop into the online chat room, go to tomhartman.com or tomhartmanshow.com and scroll down the page or in the upper left-hand corner, click on the chat room link. That'll take you to the trade form on CompuServe. Click the chat button and boom, you'll be in there live with all the folks. Interesting news today in the Wall Street Journal, the Outlook column by Michael M. Phillips. The World Bank is privatization agnostic. This is a radical change. We talked last week about the privatization of water. Consumers feeling deceived, the Wall Street Journal writes, increasingly associate privatization with higher rates for them and higher profits for foreign companies and corrupt officials. Rate increases have spurred violent demonstrations against a water concession in Bolivia and a private power plant project in Peru. A 2001 survey of 17 Latin American nations by a Latin American polling company found that 63% of respondents felt that privatization of state companies had not been beneficial, up from 45% 3 years earlier. They're looking at Africa, Latin America, Asia. Privatization contracts, they say, are being renegotiated, mostly in the areas of toll roads, power, and water, and many have actually been canceled. Telecommunication deals, they say, seem to be going quite successfully. But water and power are tougher, to quote the Wall Street Journal. They naturally tend themselves to monopolies, but not competition. Why build parallel competitive sewer pipes or power lines? And since the public often views low-cost water and light as rights, not privileges, privatization has been the focus of popular discontent. This is where it gets just amazing. The unexpected turn of events. This is from the World Bank is privatization agnostic, the Outlook by Michael M. Phillips in today's Wall Street Journal. The unexpected turn of events has left privatization enthusiasts at the World Bank, the main tool the wealthy nations have to influence economic policy in the poor ones, wondering what went wrong. And keep in mind, this is the right-wing power structures that we're talking to itself, and they're acknowledging. Anyway, they go on to say that the folks at the World Bank, its own staffers, had radically underestimated how much electricity prices would jump, nearly 50% when in Armenia
electricity was privatized and when the National Power Company was put on commercial terms. And they go on and on about this. The Armenian study simply landed with a thud at the World Bank. It implied that free market ideology had trumped clear thinking. In other words, allowing the commons to stay in the hands of we the people, like water, is clear thinking. Now, they're starting to think, perhaps, at the World Bank. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. David Boyer, Boyer, I believe it is. David, you're going to have to correct
That's
me
right,
on the
pronunciation.
David Boyer, thank you, has worked for 20 years as a journalist, activist, and public policy analyst. He's co-founder of Public Knowledge, a public interest advocacy organization dedicated to defending the commons, and senior fellow at the Norman Lear Center, USC Annenberg School for Communication. David, welcome to the program today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. I'd like to ask you, how can we defend our commons from private plunder?
Well, first of all, we have to recognize that there is such a thing as the commons and something worth protecting.
That's a big one for a lot of Americans, I think, don't understand the concept of the commons that was fairly well known across the United States from its founding up until maybe the late 1930s.
Well, in the founding years of the country, people often referred to the Commonwealth, both in the literal sense of all of us sharing this wealth, you know, the assets we all share together, as well as a democratic structure that we all work together in. So it was quite common, but of course in the past 150 years or more, that has gone by the wayside, and people don't understand that they are wealthier than they thought if they only recognize that they own certain common assets.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. By the way, let me just toss a note in here. We have a real active live chat room, the people who listen to the program at home and participate on the Internet. And way left, Jay says he tried to get in 15 minutes ago and got an error that the system was down. And so if you tried that and you got that error, you can get back in now. So, okay, David, let's back here on the topic of privatization and the commons. Let's define the commons broadly. What do you think includes the commons in the United States of America?
Well, it includes all sorts of tangible assets like the minerals and timber and water on public lands. It includes the genetic material of life, which we've all shared. It includes the atmosphere, which we all need to breathe. And then it includes things that we pay for through our government, like research and development for drugs or massive databases and research that are valuable. It includes a lot of social regimes, like public libraries are not just the buildings, but the fact that a lot of people got together and say, we want to interact in a certain way that's not a market way, sort of like universities or academic discipline. I sometimes call those gift economies because rather than transacting business through money, they give to the community and then get from the community, and it's a moral and social kind of relationship. So there's all sorts of different kinds of markets, from a lemonade stand to a hardware store to a stock market. So in the commons, you have different types of commons, and those are just some of them that I just mentioned.
Do you think that healthcare is part of the commons?
Absolutely. Things that are part of the commons are ways, are things that we share in common and everyone should have access to as a civic right, as opposed to something that should only be available to those who have money and can afford it.
And now, the right-wingers would suggest, David, that this is, you know, opening the door to socialism or communism, that the whole idea that the government should own anything of you know, substantial value, and that therefore, for example, you speak about the minerals under our soil, somebody finds oil on their property. Now, they pump it up and they sell it off and they keep the private wealth. We've built fortunes. I mean, you know, the Rockefeller fortune and so on in this country on that premise. And ironically, at the same time, over in Iraq, I just heard this weekend several different administration officials, and George Bush himself has said this, that the oil of Iraq belongs to the Iraqi people and the oil wealth should be used for the Iraqi people, which sounds more like what you're talking about. But how do you respond to these folks on the right who suggest if I own this property and there's mineral wealth under it, that's mine?
Well, it remains to be seen, of course, whether they will use the Iraqi oil for the Iraqi people. But, boy, I wish that principle could be applied more broadly here at home. Now, some states have actually done that. Some of you may be familiar with the Alaska Permanent Fund, whereby the oil revenues from oil in Alaska, a portion of it goes to a trust fund that pays out dividends every year to the citizens of Alaska. Last year, it was something on the order of, I think, either $1,500 or $2,000. That's a great commons. That's a way of everyone sharing in the wealth to something that belongs to all of them. So there's a lot of ways that commons principles could be applied to resources in the United States, but so far most politicians haven't shown much imagination or political courage in trying to instigate some of those regimes.
Well, we had a situation here in Vermont recently where there's a huge aquifer of very old water, apparently, very, very high quality water, less than 1,000 feet under the surface. Apparently, you can tap into the thing. And a person from New York came up here and bought a fairly small chunk of land, a few hundred acres, and set up a drilling operation to drill into this aquifer, which is shared by people over, I don't know, 10 or 20 counties, to drill into this aquifer, and was going to start pumping this stuff out and shipping it by train loads down to New York for bottling. And it, you know, there were these community meetings that were held, and the scientists came in and they said, if she starts doing this, it's going to cause everyone's wells to go dry. And she said, you have no legal right to stop me. This is my property. I drill down. I hit water. I pull it out. I mean, you can't stop me.
That's a typical episode of someone taking, in history, it's called the enclosure of the commons, where somebody privatizes and exports a resource that belongs to everyone. And the basic problem is that we don't have a lot of the legal structures to recognize common resources, and the people who set up the rules to define what private property is are trying to extend those rules further and further into our common resources, where people are claiming ownership of life forms and genetic structures and fresh water flows in Canada and those sorts of things. So essentially we're coming to a debate about what is the social basis of private property. It's not this absolute natural given. It's something that we socially construct and that legislators grant.
So what is the social basis of private property?
Well, in the U.S. American tradition, our government is served as a proxy for helping the people define what property should be. And we're supposed to give property rights or other government entitlements to serve the general welfare. That's what the government is founded for. We've gotten away from that over the years, where people equate the market as being synonymous with the general welfare. Oftentimes it does. The markets are very beneficial, but oftentimes they overreach. And your example of Vermont shows an example where property rights are extended way too far.
Yeah, you could say, commonly, that the market is itself a common, that the market wouldn't exist without publicly created, that is, created with our tax dollars and by our agreement, institutions such as the definition of currency, a stable system for the transaction of business, a legal system that allows people to have contracts and to exercise their rights and privileges under those contracts with the relation to each other in business enterprises, and all this sort of thing. And so I would say even business itself, even the market itself, is on the substrate of the commons.
Great fallacy of free market dogma. They don't recognize that it only works if people have trust, transparency. There's a social basis for people to enter into transactions and a government to enforce contracts. And, I think that's why the World Bank was so taken aback that its free market fantasies are suddenly being trumped by the social and political realities of the people saying, this is crazy, it's not helping us. And I think on the Internet we see this in spades, where the market structure is proving costlier and more cumbersome than a commons, where people naturally gravitate towards a commons, be it a collaborative website or peer-to-peer networking. That's a more efficient, creative way to get things done.
Got it. I agree. David, hang on. We've got a break here. We're talking with David Bollier, who's a journalist, activist, and public policy analyst. Can we defend our commons from private plunder? You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Tom Baudette for Motel 6. Dog owners will be happy to know whether your best friend is a purebred show dog or the lovably mixed-up product of a neighborhood indiscretion. They're equally welcome at Motel 6. No judgments here. So put the old Cocker Chow Labrador mix in the back seat and hit the road. But first call 1-800-4-MOTEL-6 or visit motel6.com. I'm Tom Baudette, and we'll leave the light on for you. Anacore Hotel.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of progressive talk radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise, this world that I found.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with David Bollier, who's worked for 20 years as a journalist, activist, and public policy analyst, is co-founder of Public Knowledge, a public interest advocacy organization dedicated to defending the commons, and a senior fellow at Norman Lear Center, USC Annenberg School for Communication. David, is there a website for Public Knowledge?
Yes, www.publicknowledge.org. It's based in Washington, D.C.
Makes perfect sense. In our last 5 minutes here, I remember some back during the Reagan administration, there was a minor flap over the fact that James Watt was selling off mineral rights on federal lands for $1 to $5 an acre, as I recall, to people who, and apparently there was a huge competition for these things, because there was land where, you know, there might be $500,000 worth of gold under an acre of land or more, and you could buy it for $5. And so all these different people were competing for that money, and it was being parceled out to the people who made the largest campaign contributions, apparently, to the Reagan campaign, or were old buddies of James Watt, or at least that's what was being alleged at the time. Is my memory failing me, or was that accurate? And if so, is that sort of thing still going on?
It's still going on. The 1872 Mining Act passed when President Ulysses Grant was in office. Is
probably
still
one of the most corrupt, with the possible exception of George W. Bush, presidents in the history of the United States. He was so corrupt that his own Republican Party refused to nominate him for a third term. Pardon my interrupting you.
Well, that law is still the governing law for companies or individuals who wish to obtain minerals on public lands. And it's been called minerals for the price of a cheeseburger, because you can still get it for $5 an acre or less, with no residual royalties paid for the amount of minerals that you extract. And as a result of this law, all sorts of mining companies, indeed many foreign mining companies, have essentially plundered the minerals on the public lands that ought to belong to all of us.
Right, and in the process, in many cases, they are creating enormous amounts of toxic waste. For example, gold mining very often uses arsenic to extract the gold from the crushed ore, and creating enormous amounts of waste and sediment and whatnot, destroying streams, downwind or not, downstream siltation and environmental destruction. One of the largest of these companies is a Canadian company, as I recall.
Yeah, American Barrick, as a matter of fact, it's called. And
yeah.
It is responsible for a fabulously lucrative mine that the American people has gotten very little in return for. It's one of these common kind of double, we pay twice, not only for the ripoff of our resource, but then we have to clean up after them.
Right. This is called internalizing profit and externalizing costs, which is this is one of the problems with one of the problems with so many people who try to educate people about what you might call progressive economics or something, is that you use phrases like, you know, internalizing profits and externalizing costs, and people's eyes cross. But basically what it means is, you know, they're going to take the minerals out of this land. They're going to leave behind the waste. Who pays for the waste? We do. We the people. It becomes part of the commons that we are left with. And who walks off with the profit? They do. They the corporation. So they've internalized the profit and externalized the cost.
Or another way,
David.
Sometimes put as socializing the privatizing the profits and socializing the risk. They believe in risk or the costs being socialized. They just don't believe in profits being socialized.
Right, like the insurance for nuclear power generators. We've got about a minute left here, David. How can we defend our commons from private plunder? What specifically can people do?
Well, if I can self-servingly mention the book that I wrote,
please,
which describes how we can recognize the commons. My book, Silent Theft, which is at www.silenttheft.org, outlines the dozens of resources that the American people own. We then need to start to focus on specific areas and begin to push back on our legislature, saying, we own this, we ought to get more for our money, be it drug research or public lands.
Great. David, thank you very much. David Bollier, author of Silent Theft and founder of Public Knowledge, silenttheft.org, publicknowledge.org. Fascinating stuff. We need to get to work on this right away. David, I appreciate you being on the show. Thank you very much.
You're listening
to Tom Hartman.
Thanks.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
The countdown's officially begun for a strike at Verizon Communications. 80,000 workers represented by two unions have overwhelmingly approved a strike to begin August 2nd unless a new contract is hammered out before then. The company and unions are far apart on several issues. One of the most contentious is Verizon's demand that it have the flexibility to reassign workers at will. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and Communications Workers of America both suspect Verizon would use this new power to stack most of its East Coast workforce in states with the lowest wage and weakest labor laws. Verizon and the unions begin bargaining today in New York.
Talks between the United Auto Workers and the big three car makers are barely underway, and things are already getting ugly. Last weekend, Ford Motor Company announced it'll lay off as many as 2,000 white-collar employees in a bid to cut costs, suggesting it'll also push its blue-collar workers for major concessions at the bargaining table. Meanwhile, General Motors announced it will hold on to $13 billion in cash it raised recently through the sale of corporate bonds. The money was supposed to help shore up GM's woefully underfunded pension fund, but now the automaker says it'll retain the money until contract talks are completed. The company denies it's holding on to the cash as leverage against a strike.
A federal judge in Kentucky has tossed out a $10 billion lawsuit filed on behalf of 10,000 workers at the U.S. government's uranium enrichment plant in Paducah. Some of the workers are dead. Many are dying due to what they say was unlawful exposure to radioactive toxins during their work at the plant. But while Judge Joseph McKinley sympathizes with those who are suffering, federal law gives the plant and its former operators, Lockheed Martin and Union Carbide, special immunity from such suits. The dismissal is already on appeal.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boys, come on!
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
No one knows what it's like to feel these feelings like I do.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Remarkable. What a day. What a day. In our second hour, we're going to ask the question, was Machiavelli right? And I'm going to share with you from the writings of Niccolo Machiavelli, the guy who wrote The Prince, and ask the question, number one, was he right about these things? And number two, if so, then is the current administration, or for that matter, past administrations, justified in using his principles? Do the principles that Machiavelli came up with for kingdoms apply to democracies? And this, I think, is a really important issue. In our third hour, we have a whole pile of news stuff that I want to cover and things. I'm going to get into some of that now. Coming up throughout this week, tomorrow, we're going to have on Diane Alden, who is a conservative pundit, who's going to tell you why the Patriot Act is a wonderful thing. And we're going to have on Mark Carlin, who's the guy who founded and is the editor of BuzzFlash.com, one of the premier progressive or liberal news sites out there on the Internet. On Wednesday, we have Joe Tripion. He's the campaign manager of Dean for America, the Howard Dean campaign. And I sure hope you'll have your questions ready to call in to put Joe on the hot seat here, and we'll have him for an hour. We'll be able to ask him anything you want. Should be a really interesting day. That'll be at noon on Wednesday. On Thursday, Joanne Dershow, Senator for Justice and Democracy, is going to talk about tort reform, what she calls one of the biggest public relations scams ever. And on Friday, we're going to recap the week. And next week, just FYI, I'm going to be teaching a workshop at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. It's sort of like Esalen East. I'm teaching a weekend workshop on ADHD and then a week-long workshop on activism and a whole bunch of kind of related things. And so I won't be here. But we're going to repeat a couple of shows on Monday and Friday of next week. And then I think Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Rama's going to fill in for one or two days. And Ski Anderson, who has a radio show on WLS, is going to fill in for one or two of those days. We're still working that out. So it'll be a good week. Then I'll be back the following week and things will go on. Our quote for the day, we have arrived, this is from Barry Goldwater's autobiography, we have arrived at our present position of peril in the world and at home because our leaders have refused to tell us the truth. If our republic is to survive, we must find and follow new leaders. Barry Goldwater was, I think some of his positions were misguided. He was pathologically paranoid and terrified of communists and communism. And some of that was probably legitimate. And some of it was it's funny. I think that the Soviets were doing, in many ways, the same, very much, they were playing the same con game on the rest of the world that Saddam Hussein was. Saddam wanted the people around him, particularly Iran, that he had fought this war with, and Syria, which had seized Lebanon and could be a threat, and Israel, who is viewed as a threat by many of the Arab countries. He wanted all these nations around him to think that he had all these weapons, but he didn't, because after the 91 Gulf War, he couldn't, because of the embargo, he couldn't buy the raw materials. The things were deteriorating, they were falling apart. The weapons inspectors had come in from 91 to 98 and had essentially stripped the country clean. I mean, Scott Ritter talks in detail about the hundreds of thousands of things that they destroyed. I mean, they destroyed everything they could find. The Israelis had bombed his nuclear plant back in, what was it, 91? No, it was before that, 89, as I recall. So he was just cleaned out. And then the weapons inspectors in 98 figured out that there was at least one spot where there was probably something left. And because Saddam started playing some real tricky games with them. So Bill Clinton pulls them out and goes in and bombs those spots. And so now Saddam's got nothing. He's got nothing. I mean, Clinton wiped out the last stuff he had in 98 when he bombed him. And that's what our intelligence was showing at the time, too. And that's what the weapons inspectors were showing at the time, too, which is one of the reasons why after Clinton bombed him in 98, he stopped talking about what a threat Saddam was. But Saddam really, every time George Bush said, this guy's got weapons of mass destruction, Saddam would smile and go, yeah, cool. You tell him, George, you let the world know how dangerous I am, and that way nobody's going to invade me. And it appears, from the interviews with Tariq Aziz that have apparently been done, the stuff that's been leaked, that Saddam really believed that, number one, we knew that he didn't have anything because he figured that we could read weapons inspectors' reports, that our intelligence was competent. And, in fact, it shows now, the paper trail is increasingly demonstrating that we really did know or really had a pretty reasonable certainty that he wasn't the threat that was being hyped up. And so he figured, well, they know I'm not a threat, so they're not going to come after me. But they keep calling me a threat to satisfy their domestic political agenda, and that helps me with my neighbors around here. And the Soviets, of course, were doing the same thing, as we found when the Berlin Wall fell and when the Soviet Union came unraveled, and we were able to walk in and discover that what we had been fighting against toe-to-toe, head-to-head, terrified of. I mean, in the 1950s, when I was in elementary school, we had duck and cover drills, where the bell would go off and we had to dive under our desks and cover our hands and put our hands over our eyes so that we wouldn't be blinded by the nuclear flash. I still remember this. I mean, we had nightmares about this stuff. And it turns out that the Soviet Union was just another third world country. I mean, it was poverty as far as you could see. I helped set up an orphanage. That's not quite an orphanage. It's an agricultural community, a whole program in Kaliningrad. which is part of Russia, part of the Soviet, former Soviet Union, back a few years ago for the International Salem or Salem Organization. The website is saleminternational.org. And I've spent some time in Russia, and Louise and I and Kareth have been in Moscow several times. And it is, I mean, this was one very poor country. They were having terrible, you know, I saw this back in 86 when I went into East Berlin. I remember it was a cold, rainy day. It was late fall. And it was just like the sky was just the steel gray, and the air seemed gray, and all the buildings were gray. And you come out of after you go through the whole security thing, you come out of into East Germany, into East Berlin. And I walked a block or so, and there was a line of people who were dressed in Western clothing, you know, kind of fancy, not fancy, fancy clothes by the definition of the East Germans. And I walked up, I said, this is the taxi line. Well, see, private taxis were banned. And so all the government ran the taxi services. And because it was like a guaranteed job, the taxi drivers didn't much like driving because they couldn't make any kind of, you know, their income had nothing to do with how many people they transported. So most of them were just sitting in coffee shops. And so there were these private individuals who were running these black market taxis. And they could go to prison if they got caught. And I got picked up. My oldest daughter, Kinder, was with me. And we got picked up by this guy named Toasten. A young German kid, he was like maybe 19 or 20 years old, driving around in a car that belonged to his friend of his, and he took us on this tour of East Berlin. And it was so obvious that these people were so poor, and now the flip side of that was there was also a strong sense of family and culture in East Berlin at that time, and Toasten talked about that at some length. And that is, you know, many of the East Berliners now, and East Germans, are very upset that with the merger with the West, they're saying it's wiped out our culture. So, you know, where is the balance in here? Well, the balance, I think, comes in the ideals that this country was founded on, that there is a commonwealth. That's why it's the Commonwealth of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, that we share collectively our commonwealth. And in regard to those things that we collectively own, and we also allow for the private ownership of property, and that's something that was, you know, they were very clear about, it was written into the Constitution, and the private ownership of business and the means of production. So this... And this is where the right-wingers miss it. I mean, Alan Greenspan, he's one of these Ayn Rand objectivists. The neocons, so many of them, they read Ayn Rand, who escaped as a refugee from Russia when she was 7 years old, came to the United States, and wrote Atlas Shrugged, this book that pits, basically in short form, evil, stupid, big government against noble entrepreneur businesses. And it just isn't that simple. That's how it was in Russia after the Bolshevik Revolution that Ayn Rand lived through. But that's not how what the founders envisioned for the United States. That instead there was this notion that we have this collective commons, and the collective commons is a sacred trust. It's an important thing. It's a vital thing that we must protect. Devastations, decades of devastation ahead. As global warming melts the Alps, reads the headline in Sunday's newspaper, The Observer, the London newspaper, an article by Robbie McKee. This, our commons. It says, for scientists now believe global warming is melting the Alps, threatening widespread devastation over the next two decades. And, of course, long beyond that, but that's how long it's going to take to melt the Alps. And they're seeing these structures that have been built on permafrost in the Alps, you know, holding up cable lines and ski lifts and all kinds of things, that are starting to fall over because the ground that they're anchored into is melting for the first time in 100,000 years or more. This also reminds me, I was in Australia 2 years ago when they were having the big wildfires around Sydney, and on the Australian television news, ABC, Australian Broadcasting Corporation news, and of course, even on the local news, and even on the network that Rupert Murdoch had, they would talk in the reports about the fires that were sweeping across Australia, about how it was caused by global warming, they had these extensive reports, and they were on the news. about how global warming was responsible for the wildfires that were devastating Australia, and they were going to have to change their land use practices, and they were going to have to change, you know, all the things structurally that they were going to have to change with regard to how they managed the commons, how they could defend their commons from the changes that were coming about as a result of global warming. And so there was this rational debate based on this problem. Here in the United States, you don't hear discussion of global warming because Fred Smith and a half a dozen other well-paid phony scientists will come screaming out of the woodwork, paid for by large oil companies, to say, wait a minute, there's scientists who disagree. Nonsense. Nonsense. How can we defend our commons from private plunder? What can we do? Well, back to the melting of the Alps. Oh, and you know, where I went off on that tangent was the wildfires that we're seeing out west. There has been a change, and the storms that we're seeing across the Midwest, there has been a change in the weather in the United States in the last decade, a really significant change. We have reached a meteorological tipping point. While the temperature of the world has gone up about 7/10 of a degree Celsius in the last 15 or 20 years, and the carbon dioxide concentrations have gone up about 20-25%. We have reached this meteorological tipping point where the atmosphere now is able to hold more moisture because it has more heat. And holding more moisture produces two things. In some parts of the country, we're getting more cloud cover and what feel like colder days, like the Washington, D.C. area, the New York, throughout this spring. In other parts of the country, we're getting no rainfall at all. These big high-pressure systems that just, you know, push away all. And when we do have storms, the storms are more violent because there's more energy in the atmosphere. A storm is a function, is an expression of the energy held in the atmosphere. And the atmosphere is a dynamically unstable system. It's stable in its instability. It's continually flowing, continually moving. And you crank that thing up and you add power and juice into it, energy, from the greenhouse gases that are holding more and more of the sun's heat into the earth, and you combine that, of course, with the natural oscillations of temperature as a consequence of solar patterns, and boom, we've got this. So now the Great Mountains ranges, this is the Alps now, the Great Mountain ranges' icy crust of permafrost, which holds its stone pillars and rock faces together and into which the cable car stations and pylons are rooted, is disappearing. Right, it's Robbie McKee in The Observer this Sunday. Decades of devastation ahead as global warming melts the Alps. Professor Michael Davies of Dundee University says, we have found that the ground temperature in the Alps around the Matterhorn has risen considerably over the past decade. The ice that holds mountain slopes and rock faces together is simply disappearing. At this rate, it will vanish completely with profound consequences. So we're seeing this is happening all over the planet, and it's just amazing. Everybody else gets it. I was in England last fall, and they were having 60-mile-an-hour winds coming in. I flew into it, in fact. It's a wild ride. And 60-mile-an-hour winds with rain in London as you're walking around the streets, and they're talking on the news about how the difference in the weather this decade, from all decades past where it had been tracked as a consequence of global warming. The ozone layer, another part of our commons. How can we defend our commons from private exploitations? The ozone layer, if you were to compress, ozone is a form of oxygen. And if you were to compress the ozone layer to the pressure here at sea level, it would be about the thickness of a piece of shoe leather all around the world. Now, in the first couple of billion years of the existence of this planet, there was virtually no life on this planet. And the reason why was because the levels of ultraviolet radiation from the sun were so toxic, nothing could survive. And it took a billion or 2 years for the ozone layer to form, for enough ozone to make its way up high enough in the atmosphere to create an ozone shield that would block out so much of that UV radiation that would then allow the development of life on Earth. And if that ozone layer goes, all life on Earth will go with it. That'll be the end of it. It'll be the absolute end of it. 1-800-TALK, yes, is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And right after this break, we've got Terry from California on the line. We'll pick up that call. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned.
A real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The Radio Shack Glossary of Electronics. Today's term, the Odyssey.
It's that epic journey people take, searching for electronic accessories. You drive to this store and that, but no luck. And by the end of the day, your behind is imprinted on your car seat.
At Radio Shack, we've got over 7,200 stores, so you're probably within 5 minutes of one right now. And our experts are there to give you easy answers to all your electronic accessory needs.
This is Bernie Mac, and just reading the Odyssey in school was enough for me.
Radio Shack. You've got questions, we've got answers.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've been talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear my wife program the other night? Some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hey, please.
The Mike
Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Little darling, it's been a long, long, lonely winter. Little darling, it seems like you since this trip here.
How can we defend our commons from private plunder? This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Now, George W. Bush is targeting the International Treaty to Save the Ozone Layer, which protects all life on Earth from deadly radiation, according to an article in The Independent of UK. Now, the reason why Bush is trying to wreck the International Treaty that protects the ozone layer? Apparently because there is a pesticide made in the U.S. which is extremely destructive to ozone, whose manufacturer is lobbying very effectively, passing cash to the Bush administration. 1-800-TALK, yes, Terry from California is on the line. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Terry.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to make a few points if I could.
Okay, it's going to have to be short. We've got about 2.5 minutes in this segment, and I got Judy from Illinois on the line, too.
Okay, first thing is I'd like to thank you so much for bringing your unbelievably great intellect to us over the radio.
Well, bless you, Terry. Thank you.
I maybe on some people, they can get a better graphic representation of what's going on with the rainforest in the world, which is a narrow band that goes around the planet and it's where these rainforests grow. If you go to a site, and it's www.therainforestsite.com.
Therainforestsite.com, those 4 words.
It's all one word, therainforestsite.com.
Right.
If you go there and just stare at that little graphic right there for 6 seconds or so, it'll show you, it'll depict the world and the rainforest, and it'll show from the year 1990 up till today and then project on out to 2011 what the rainforests are looking like as far as how they're being depleted. And in 6 seconds, you'll get a real good picture of just exactly how we're cutting off the assault on we call it assault on the planet, but we're actually assaulting ourselves. And this is how we breathe. This is where our
air. These are the lungs of the planet. We breathe out carbon dioxide. They breathe it in, and they exhale oxygen, which we.
Yeah, and these are our lungs, and we're mutilating our lungs. Just take a look, 6 seconds to look at therainforestsite.com, and I think you'll get a good picture of just exactly what we're doing to our lungs and our planet.
Great. Okay.
Thank you again.
Terry, thank you very much. Thanks for sharing that, and I appreciate the call. Judy, we've run up against the top of the hour, but if you'll hold on to the line, Judy in Illinois, I will take your call right after the news at 6 minutes after the hour, and you're in the vast radical mis... Welcome to I can't even say it. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Molloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Molloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Molloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
About the Mike Molloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Molloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. Mortar rounds have hit the U.S. Embassy compound in Liberia. Initial reports said no one was injured. The shelling comes as 41 U.S. Marines were being sent to Liberia. Their mission is to increase security at the embassy and prepare for a possible evacuation of American citizens as rebel fighters blast their way through the Liberian capital. Another American soldier is dead after he and his Iraqi interpreter were attacked in Baghdad today. Three other soldiers were wounded. Witnesses said they saw two military vehicles blown up at about the same time, but officials could not confirm that the explosions were part of the fatal attack. Over the weekend, four American soldiers and an Iraqi driver were also killed. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin is offering an amendment to the Defense Appropriations Bill calling on the Bush administration to investigate the role of executive branch policymakers in the development and use of intelligence related to Operation Iraqi Freedom. Durbin says investigating CIA Director George Tenet for faulty information contained in the President's State of the Union address is only the tip of the iceberg.
We shouldn't be asking why George Tenet didn't stop President Staff from including this language in the State of the Union address, which the President has now disavowed. The larger and more important question is, who were the people in the White House who were so hell-bent on putting language in the president's speech that was misleading?
Durbin says his amendment will strip $50 million from the Intelligence Community Management account until the president submits a report to Congress on the role of the White House staff and other executive branch policymakers involved in developing the use of Iraqi intelligence. Kenyan investigators have reached the country's second highest mountain where a plane carrying a family of 12 Americans and their two South African pilots crashed on Saturday, killing all on board. The Fairchild SW4 turboprop plowed into Mount Kenya at about 16,000 feet above sea level. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports all 12 American victims were members of the same extended family.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front! Hey, we made it! Yeah. 4 hours back-to-back Godzilla movies!
Wait!
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
No. Excuse me, my friend here wants to know if the girl on the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over.
Excuse me, miss. There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What? Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
The young woman who has accused L.A. Lakers basketball star Kobe Bryant of sexual assault reportedly had emotional problems and overdosed on drugs just a couple of months before her encounter with him. The Orange County Register reports legal experts call the disclosure dynamite evidence, a bonanza for the defense. But still, prosecutor Mark Hurlburt says his case is solid.
Again, based upon the testimonial evidence, physical evidence, I believe I can prove my case beyond a reasonable doubt.
Bryant's defense team says the evidence falls short and Bryant will plead not guilty.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel 6. Some websites use outrageous gimmicks to attract visitors, like click here and get three wishes. But at Motel6.com, they have Click 6 web bargains that save you even more off the lowest price of any national chain. And you can only get them when you book online. Sorry, no three wishes, but you will have more money. That's usually wish number one anyway. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light on for you. And a core hotel.
Adoring fans are lining up for the chance to pay their last respects to salsa legend Celia Cruz, Lisa Reminello reports.
Thousands are expected at the Frank E. Campbell Funeral Home on Manhattan's Upper East Side, where some devoted fans were waiting last night when Celia Cruz's casket arrived.
She was part of our lives.
Everywhere she was just part of us.
She's part of everybody's culture.
Today's viewing will serve as a public funeral for the Queen of Salsa, whose body will be taken by horse-drawn carriage to St. Patrick's Cathedral for tomorrow's private funeral, followed by a private burial at Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx. More than 100,000 fans attended a public viewing over the weekend in Miami. Lisa Romanello, New York.
Remember his name, Ben Curtis. He's golf's first rookie to win a major tournament since 1913. Curtis came from behind to win the British Open in Sandwich, England yesterday. He beat out the likes of Thomas Bjorn and Tiger Woods, finishing the tournament a mere one stroke under par. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Remember Bill Cosby's classic comedy routine called What is Air? Funny. But the potential danger of airbags to children is no laughing matter. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
The lives airbags save give us something to smile about, but risk of injury to children has been a concern. Now, NEC's Seat Sentry may make that a worry of the past. Based on electric field sensing technology, this system uses very low-level electric fields to detect the presence of a body as well as its height and proximity to the airbag, then prevents deployment when that body is too small or too close. Kudos to Seat Sentry for its performance in saving children's lives. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to our program, broadcasting coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting from outer space on the Sirius Radio Satellite System, and broadcasting live on the Internet from radiopower.org and IEAmericaRadio.com. Archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org, and you can find all that stuff at TomHartman.com, including access to our chat room, where we got a bunch of somebody in the chat room said, "Hey, Nancy Skinner is going to be running for the United States Senate." And yeah, I got that email over the weekend, and in fact, we got to talk to Nancy about getting her on the show. Nancy is just one of God's wonderful people. She is just a fine human being, a brilliant person. She has one of those scalpel sharp intellects. She understands the issues. She takes no prisoners. If you've ever seen her interviewed on Fox or CNN, she's commonly on there as their punching bag liberal, and she always stands up well and does a great job. Nancy Skinner would make a great contribution to the United States Senate, and I encourage you to check out her website. I'm pretty sure it's just nancyskinner.com. NancyskinnerR.com, and it has the announcement that she's running for the United States Senate and all that sort of thing. And also in the chat room, somebody mentioned that on Zenpickle, on the Zenpickle.com, I think, site or org, Zenpickle site, he's got a listing of the top 20 Americans as described by conservatives. And FDR is number 10. Interesting. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Judy from Illinois has been very patiently waiting. Judy, thanks so much for sticking with us over that break. Welcome to the program.
Yes, and Nancy is very much an environmentalist.
Hey, Judy, I'm going to have to ask you to speak up a little bit.
Warfare is very toxic to the Earth, and it's almost a terrorism against the Earth. When I was a young girl, after World War II, I remember the severe winters. I even wrote to the Weather Bureau and asked them to study if the weather had changed after each of those big wars. The climatology had changed, because that's a lot of particulates in the air. You know, when a volcano explodes, it changes the environment of the Earth. So you can imagine what happens during a war with the constant bombing.
It's an interesting question. Yeah,
and I'm wondering why weather people have not addressed that.
Do you think that the wars that are going on around the world right now may have something to do with this? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, at one of the conferences, the world conferences, they claim that the World War One and Two started the big hole in the ozone layer, and the United States refused to let them put that in the report.
Yeah, interesting stuff, Judy. Well, thank you very much for sharing that, and thanks for patiently waiting to do so. I'm sure many of our listeners will find that very interesting and useful.
Every day is an outrage. I could call 10 times.
I know. It's like we start at 5:30 every morning to do the show prep for the show and going through the news of the day, and it's just there's never enough time. I'm right there with you, Judy. Thank you very much. 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937. We are going to get into the question here in just a few minutes of, was Machiavelli right? By the way, Nancy Skinner's website, Char, running our board here today in Detroit, says it's SkinnerTheWinner.com is the website for her campaign. Skinner, S-K-I-N-N-E-R, TheWinner.com. 1-800-TALK, yes. Jeff in Dallas, Texas is on the line. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. I think Jeff's on the line. He's supposed to be there. Jeff, are you still there? Apparently not. You can pop him on hold, Char, and see if he's going to come back. And maybe he'll...
Jeff, pick up the phone.
Anyway, he's gone. Okay, we've lost Jeff, apparently. 1-800-TALK, yes, is the number. The question, was Machiavelli right? What got me started on this was an interesting article that was posted on one of the news websites this morning by a 15-year-old in, I'm looking for it, and it must have gotten in the wrong folder. Anyhow, there was a 15-year-old student who wrote an article about the Machiavellian positions of the White House, and I'm pretty sure it was a link off BuzzFlash.com. And it got me thinking. I had back, I don't know, last year or so, sometime in the last 2 years, actually, I was out in Washington State and spent the night at David Corton's house. And we had a conversation that got me started thinking about Machiavelli. And I downloaded a copy of The Prince. It's in public domain. And just started reading it. Because everybody has read about The Prince, but not everybody reads The Prince, and I was one of those who had never read it. And I actually sat down and read it for the very first time in my life all the way through. It's a short book. You can read it in about 2 hours, depending on how fast you read. And came up with some excerpts from it that I thought were of particular interest. And I'd like to just go through these with you, and let's see. The question is, was Machiavelli right? I mean, the underlying principle of the whole thing is that the means justify the end, or the end justifies the means, rather. And so hence, here, this is from Chapter 8. Chapter entitled, this is The Prince by Niccolo Machiavelli. A chapter entitled, Concerning Those Who Have Obtained a Principality by Wickedness. Okay. So this is advice. Now, keep in mind, here's how the prince came about, by the way. Machiavelli wanted a job or had a job in the court of one of the Italian kings. And I should have grabbed this information before it came on the air here. I apologize. I don't remember the name of who he was working for. And he wanted to kind of rise up in the ranks. And so he wrote this book of advice about how a prince should conduct himself. And it really never made a big splash in Machiavelli's life. In fact, he died in relatively obscure, as I recall. Now, my recollections here are a few years old, but that's my recollection of it. But it has then, since made it into print and into publication. And so the various chapters are on various topics that a prince may confront. And this one, Chapter 8, is concerning those who have obtained a principality by wickedness. And I'd like you to remember, before I read this, the extraordinary and stunning, jaw-dropping, awe-filled response that so many people had to the current administration. Holy cow, look at what they're doing in this first year. All, wiping out environmental laws, rapid taxing decreases, all this stuff. Machiavelli, I'm going to read this, and then I've got a couple of calls here on the line. We're going to get to those. Machiavelli says, Hence it is to be remarked that in seizing a state, the usurper ought to examine closely into all those injuries which it is necessary for him to inflict, and to do them all at one stroke, so as not to have to repeat them daily. And thus, by not unsettling men, he will be able to reassure them and win himself to them by benefits. He who does otherwise, either by timidity or evil advice, is always compelled to keep the knife in his hand. For injuries ought to be done all at one time, so that having tasted less, they offend less. Benefits ought to be given little by little, so that the flavor of them may last longer. We have a series of chapters here from The Prince by Machiavelli. I want to go through and share with you and draw some parallels. You'll find them, I mean, not just with the Bush administration, but the question is, does the whole philosophy of the ends justifies the means? Is this appropriate in a democracy? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Brian in Santa Fe is on the line. Brian, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom, good to talk to you.
Hey, thanks for calling, Brian.
Sure. I think this administration is Machiavellian in their approach. I'm not sure how that will play out. It'll be interesting. It would have been interesting to see had Machiavelli's instructions or ideas actually been utilized by a past administration. I can only think of who was the Tsar of Russia, Ivan the Terrible. I suppose he tried that, and it didn't work too well for him in the end. So maybe it won't work so well for Bush. Now, I wanted to point out or bring up one point. Did you watch Wolf Blitzer yesterday?
No, I did not.
Night Edition?
No.
He had Chuck Hagel and Jay Rockefeller on.
Oh, interesting. Chuck Hagel, the guy who owned the voting machine company before he and then quit his job to run for the United States Senate in Nebraska, where all the voting machines had been installed by his own company, and won an upset in the primaries and an upset against an incumbent Democratic governor that all the polls showed was going to win. Chuck Hagel, yes.
That Chuck Hagel. And it's interesting because I think what we're going to start seeing here is a feeding frenzy of the right upon its own members, because Chuck Hagel was saying that this whole thing with the administration and weapons of mass destruction, et cetera, is much deeper than George Tenet. It's Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, and Dick Cheney.
In particular Dick Cheney. And you need to speak up a little, Brian. I can hardly hear you there. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I found it interesting that he was willing to point the finger at the very administration and all the members of the administration that he was protecting not 2 weeks ago in this Senate.
Yeah. Well, Hagel has presidential aspirations himself. He wants to be president of the United States, and so it doesn't surprise me that that he would do that. He's trying to position himself as the Republican alternative to Bush in the hopes that a Republican alternative will be looked for by his own party.
Well, so do you think that even if this witch hunt, which is now going to start, does have an effect, and it does bring out the truth about the administration's lies, is it just as good even if it was done for these spurious reasons, or should it be done in truth and honesty? Or do we care?
Yeah. Well, interesting questions, Brian, and thanks for the call. I appreciate you calling. I am hopeful, frankly, that they don't, you know, impeach these guys. I'd rather see them simply voted out of office. I think what they did to Bill Clinton was deplorable, and I think, frankly, that it shouldn't be done to George Bush, although, you know, it depends on what we learn. It depends on what we learn, but I think that the bar of high crimes and misdemeanors is a pretty high bar, and there have been some very corrupt administrations in the past of the United States, and we've simply let the democratic process take care of them rather than trying to nail them. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Chris in Ohio is on the line. Chris, welcome to the program. Chris, we've only got about 20 seconds left here in this segment, but if you can hold on over the break, I can finish the call with you if you want to make a quick comment.
I can just make a quick comment, Tom.
Okay.
I've given a lot of thought to this, and listening to Tony Blair with his joint conference with Bush, the claims they were making were inherently Machiavellian, in that it didn't matter what we said we were going to do going to war. It's just a matter that the guy's gone. The end of
That's exactly. The ends justify the means. That you're absolutely right, Chris. Thanks so much for sharing that. 1-800-TALK-YES. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Joe is regretful.
Man, am I regretful!
The problem is Joe just bought a used car.
Why did I do it? Why?
And Joe didn't use Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. And now he might have made a $10,000 mistake.
Here's the wound! Here's the salt! Mix it up!
Sorry, Joe. Next time, go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax report and get the truth about used cars.
Yeah, yeah, Carfax. Heard you the first time.
Carfax, Carfax, Carfax. Come on.
Research shows that even the arteries of teenagers can actually start to clog with cholesterol. I'm Bob Harris for Smart Balance Buttery Spreads. Today's diets are just too high in saturated fat and trans fatty acids. Improve your family's diet with Smart Balance Buttery Spread, with no hydrogenation and no trans fatty acids. Smart Balance avoids the bad things in butter and margarine. Make it Smart Balance for the right balance of fats. I think you're going to love it.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
Sherwood Baylert is a member of Congress and, despite that, not a bad guy. He's a New York Republican who's been in the House for more than 20 years, and he loves the place. Fine. It's said that some people who muck manure for a living come to love the smell, so everyone to their own taste. But I thought Sherwood had been sniffing the congressional perfumes a bit too deeply when he recently declared that the House is, quote, the one institution in the whole wide world that's the personification of this great democracy of ours. Democracy? The great majority of Americans are factory workers, clerks, cab drivers, dirt farmers, teachers, Main Street merchants, programmers, waitresses, healthcare workers, and the like. How many of them serve in Congress, or are even marginally represented by those who serve there? About 70% of Americans make less than $50,000 a year. How many of our Congress critters go to Washington from such an income perspective? Indeed, the U.S. Public Interest Research Group reports that nearly half of the newly elected members of Congress are millionaires, which 99.5% of Americans are not. And if the House is so representative of our people, why didn't we get a pay raise 4 of the last 5 years as they gave themselves? Why don't we have top-flight health coverage paid for by taxpayers as they do? Why don't we get golden no-worry pensions as they do? Phil Graham is one example of congressional apartness from the rest of America. The Texas senator, who just retired, opposed any government program to help regular folks while he slavishly served the corporate powers that financed his elections. He became a millionaire while in office. And now that he's out, we the people will send him a retirement check of $78,534 every year. He'll get more doing nothing than 80% of us will make working day in and day out. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's the personification of plutocracy, not of democracy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
There's a man in the funny papers we all know.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. good. Not in the funny papers, although Doonesbury actually has pretty good political commentary. We're broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network. It's 25 minutes after the hour. Also live on channel 145 of the Sirius satellite radio system. And, of course, broadcasting live across the Internet from radiopower.org and ieamericaradio.com. Alexander Hart is the 15-year-old sophomore at Winter Park High School who wrote this piece in the Orlando Sentinel titled Machiavellian Bush. And interesting article, got me thinking and led to the idea for this hour's segment. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And David in Santa Fe is on the line. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi.
Hi.
So, look, I think Machiavelli himself is a great man. He was the first political scientist. You know, he lived in the Renaissance when all sorts of new points of view about physical science were developing, and he tried to develop the point of view of political science by looking at the actual behavior of rulers, you know, rulers of the church and rulers, secular rulers. And he tried to observe what they did and advise them.
Yeah, although, David, he also, and he talks about this repeatedly in The Prince, he also was operating out of this fundamental worldview, foundational story belief that humans are inherently evil and will always act out evil if they are unconstrained, which of course is one of the underpinnings of Christianity. And it's a belief that, frankly, I reject. And I think
I reject it too, but I don't think that was Machiavelli's belief. So I think he tried to observe what happened. His goal, which he also states in his book, is that he wanted to see arts and commerce prosper in Florence.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hold Bush to that standard. Let's say, never mind means and ends, good and evil, is what Bush is doing objectively good for the United States? Will it help us in the long run?
Yeah.
I think the answer to that is no. And I think Machiavelli would say no.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think Bush, of course, thinks yes. I mean, it's a tough one. Let me just read you a little quote from chapter 17 concerning cruelty and clemency and whether it's better to be loved than feared. Machiavelli said, "Upon this question arises whether it's better to be loved than feared or feared than loved. It may be answered that one should wish to be both, but because it is difficult to unite them in one person, it is much safer to be feared than to be loved. One of the two, either must be dispensed with. Because this is to be asserted in general of men, that human beings are ungrateful, fickle, false, cowardly, covetous, and as long as you succeed, they are yours entirely. They will offer you their blood, property, life, and children, as is said above, but when the need is far distant, but when it approaches, they will turn against you. And that prince who relying entirely on their promises has neglected other precautions is ruined, because friendships may be obtained by payment and not by greatness or nobility of mind, may not be earned, but they are not secured in time of need, cannot be relied upon, because men have less scruple in offending one who is beloved than one who is feared." And he goes on. I mean, he repeatedly throughout The Prince, he keeps talking about how the average person is, as he says, fickle, false, cowardly, and ungrateful. So, David, I think that Machiavelli, I agree with you, is a great political scientist, but I'm not sure I'd make him my hero.
Well, he tried to advise the prince on how to create a civil society, not have it fall apart. You know,
how to retain power and hire him.
Yeah, but maintaining power is the function of the state.
Well, no, maintaining power is the function in Machiavelli's mind of the prince.
The
state is the vehicle to do it.
Its principal function is to maintain its own power.
No, because not in a democracy. In a democracy, we, the people, give the state its power. Its legitimacy comes from us. It doesn't go from the top down. It goes from the bottom up. David, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection?
It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Industry is hard on the environment, according to advocates of green burials. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. It's not a comfortable topic, but critics say the way we deal with our dead is hazardous to the environment. They advocate a more natural way of returning human remains to the earth. Deborah Green is a psychologist at the College of William and Mary in Virginia. She co-authored an article on the environmental impact of burial practices in the journal Conservation Biology. Green says the practice of embalming the dead began during the Civil War. She says the whole business has gotten more removed from nature and more toxic ever since.
The embalming fluids are extremely toxic, and then you often are putting the person in a coffin that has either metals or sealants or varnishes or paints or other toxic substances. The vault is often sealed with toxic substances.
Green says embalming chemicals can pollute ground and surface waters near funeral homes. Even some older cemeteries have become sources of groundwater contamination, and she says modern cemeteries are usually kept up with heavy applications of weed-killing chemicals. Green says the alternative is a growing movement called green burials.
Instead of a traditional cemetery, you have a nature preserve where people can be buried if they are not embalmed, if they are in a biodegradable casket, or if they are cremated. They usually are not allowed to have a marker unless it's made of native stone.
Green burials are catching on in parts of Europe, but they're still rare in North America. Two organizations that offer the service are Memorial Ecosystems in South Carolina and the Memorial Society of British Columbia. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
She came, she came down to me. She found an angel. Goo, 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 da, 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 da. What is his name now?
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. My goal for you for this hour is that when we're done, you'll have a passing familiarity with Machiavelli. I've got about seven chapters of his stuff that I want to share with you here. Chapter 14, That Which Concerns a Prince on the Subject of the Art of War. A prince ought to have no other aim or thought, nor select anything else for his study, Machiavelli said, than war and its rules and discipline. For this is the sole art that belongs to him who rules, and it is of such force that it not only upholds those who are born princes, but it often enables men to rise from a private station to that rank. War is the way to hold power, Machiavelli says. Has Karl Rove been reading The Prince? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And John in Grand Rapids, the town in which I was born. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, John. Come on in, sit down, and tell us what's on your mind.
Hi, Tom. We're having a thunderstorm here in your hometown right now.
Oh, great.
Hopefully the thunder doesn't interrupt my speaking.
Hopefully not. It's raining here, too, in Vermont.
Thinking of Machiavelli, I was reminded of another one of your favorite authors, Ayn Rand. I think in one of her books she said that only the ends justify the means. That's the only possible thing that could justify any means is the end that you come to.
Well, and, if you are honest about the means, and you are honest about the ends, then she's right. I mean, if that's what she said, I mean, that's certainly logical. I mean, that's just a simple law of behavior. We do things because we're trying to accomplish some goal. But Machiavelli's point was it's okay to conceal the goal and use means that seem at odds with the goal in order to accomplish that goal.
Right, okay. Also, if it's all right, I wanted to address the last caller before the break, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
He disagreed with. He mentioned that he thought that the state only existed to perpetuate its own power, and you disagreed and said that the state gets its power from us.
In a constitutional Republican democracy, yes.
Right. I was just thinking that for me it helps to distinguish between a government and the state. The government being the part that is, as you say, democratic, gets its power from us, and the state being that part of the structure which really exists to defend the rights of, I guess, the property class, you'd call it.
What's the difference between the government and the state?
It's just a different analytical method. I mean, the mm-hmm. line between the government in our system is like the difference between the Congress and the executive branch.
Right. Maybe a better way to illustrate it is that in England, in the United Kingdom, the Queen is the head of state, but the Prime Minister is the head of government. And so the Prime Minister is responsible with maintaining the and making sure that the ordinary functions of the government are performed, that the trains run on time and that the water works and that the lights are on and that the streets are clean. And the Queen, as the head of state, is the person who, at least in theory, makes the ultimate and final decisions on how things will go and represents the state, is the figurehead for the state, is the representative, the ultimate representative of the state, both domestically and internationally. We don't make that distinction in the United States. It's one of the things that Madison talks about in the Federalist Papers, that we have combined the functions of head of state and head of government into a single person, that being the president.
Right.
And so I think in America, maybe the drawing the distinction between state and government is one that is a little too arcane or didactic for most folks.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. I find it helpful, though.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much for calling in. 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937 is the number. And Billy in Santa Cruz is on the line. Billy, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, Tom. Tom, you are so intelligent, and you're, believe me, the only talk show in America talking about Machiavelli today.
Really?
But you know what, Tom? You got to move out of Vermont.
Why is that?
Well, because you're completely wrong about the reality on the ground of the political life we lead. Let's talk about reality for a minute.
Okay.
The problem in this country today are conservative Republicans. I am not a Democrat, but I understand who the enemy is. I understand who's damaging the Republic. Now, here's some of the things they do. You suggested that we shouldn't try to impeach Bush because they shouldn't have tried to impeach Clinton.
Well, okay. I said it, and then I sort of retracted it. I said, I don't think that we should be rushing into impeachment right at this point, but I also think that
we should take the very first shot we get at it, Tom.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. The Republicans aren't... everything that they say about us is really true about them. We didn't steal the election. They did. It's got to be hardball. You know, we didn't start out by not approving their judges. They wouldn't let us get anything through their committees. Is that right?
I understand all that, Billy. And let me give you two quick reasons why, if the Republicans had been successful in impeaching Bush, it would have, or Clinton, it would have backfired on them, and why there's great danger in impeaching Bush. If they had successfully removed Bill Clinton from office, Al Gore would definitely be president right now because
he'd
have the benefit of incumbency.
Right.
People would have had an opportunity to see him perform.
Yep. Yep.
And if they get George Bush out of office and Dick Cheney does a good job, or he brings in somebody charismatic as vice president who could then run for president, you may have somebody who will be a lot harder to beat than George Bush,
sure.
Number one.
And I see that. However, I just think there's a bigger picture, and that is that the Republicans think they can take us every time. If we, you know, you're the example of it, too. You are so smart, but you're soft. You're a nice guy. You don't have the hard edge that will cut these people apart like they will do to you, given every chance they get. In other words,
Billy, the way that I can cut at these guys is in the ballot box and in the voter poll, and that's where I will do it.
But the people aren't. Again, you know, I'll talk, Vermont. Vermont is the state where they have let homosexuals marry, isn't it?
Civil unions, yeah.
Okay, whatever you want to call it. The fact that, but we're not doing it in the rest of the states. So Vermont is, in my opinion, for example, way ahead, much more highly evolved than the rest of us. They've learned how to mind their own goddamn business and not be evil to people. But that's not the way it is in America, is it?
It's definitely not. Although, you know, in Massachusetts right now, there's a case before the Supreme Court where the state of Massachusetts may be allowing gay marriage, which is a big step beyond what we have here in Vermont.
The Supreme Court. Yeah, I remember. That's the thing that the Republicans will do anything to pack any way they can.
Well, it was the Supreme Court in Vermont that mandated civil unions. It was This didn't come from Howard Dean or from the legislature.
Again,
it came
Vermont
from the Supreme
being different.
Court
Massachusetts, case. Of course, being the only state that voted for McGovern or something that year that I remember.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, what does Machiavelli say about the extent to which you've got to be as dirty as the next guy? Politics is not a highly elevated experience. It's actually about the guy who's the sneakiest, dirtiest, low-down guy.
Well, thank you for setting that up for me, Billy. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call, and let me get right to that. You just set it up perfectly, because this article by 15-year-old Alexander Hart, Machiavellian Bush, and he talks about how President Bush appears to believe in Machiavellian politics. His Patriot Act allows the government to delve deeply into our personal lives and the interest of national security. He goes on through this whole thing. So let's listen to what Machiavelli said. He said, therefore, a wise prince ought to adopt such a course that his citizens will always, in every sort and kind of circumstance, have need of the state and of him, and he will always find them faithful. I want to come back to this one. Chapter 11, concerning new principalities which are acquired by one's own arms and ability. He talks about Moses, Cyrus, Romulus, and Theseus, and he says these are the most excellent. You know, he holds them up as examples of leaders. And he says, in examining their actions and lives, one cannot see that they owed anything to fortune beyond opportunity. He says it was necessary, therefore, to Moses that he should find the people of Israel in Egypt enslaved and oppressed by the Egyptians, in order that they should be disposed to follow him so as to be delivered out of bondage. Now this was the playbook that Karl Rove took from 9/11. Machiavelli says it is necessary, therefore, if we desire to discuss this matter thoroughly, to inquire whether these innovators can rely on themselves or have to depend on others. That is to say, whether to consummate their enterprise, have they to use prayers or can they use force? In the first instance, they always succeed badly and never compass anything, but when they rely on themselves and use force, they are rarely endangered. He's talking about we must, in order to have power, you must have an enemy. Chapter 16, concerning cruelty and clemency and whether it's better to be loved than feared. He said, love is preserved by the link of obligation, which, owing to the baseness of men, is broken at every opportunity for their advantage. But fear preserves you by a dread of punishment, which never fails. Therefore, a prince ought to inspire fear in such a way that if he does not win love, he avoids hatred, because he can endure very well being feared while he is not hated. And this, Billy, by the way, gets into, again, my concern about the impeachment thing, although, as I said, I'm not opposed to it, depending on what comes out. But when it is necessary for him to proceed against the life of someone, Machiavelli says he must do it on proper justification and for manifest cause, but above all things, he must keep his hands off the property of others, because men more quickly forget the death of their father than the loss of their patrimony. Tax cuts. Machiavelli is recommending tax cuts in The Prince 500 years ago. Chapter 18, concerning the way in which princes should keep faith. Now, this, Billy, goes right to the issue that you raised, and I really appreciate it. He says, everyone admits how praiseworthy it is in a prince to keep faith and to live with integrity and not with craft. Craft being Machiavelli's word for deception. Okay. Nevertheless, our experience has been that those princes who have done great things have held good faith of little account and have known how to circumvent the intellect of men by craft. And in the end have overcome those who have relied on their word. If men were entirely good, this precept would not hold. But because they are evil and will not keep faith with you, you too are not bound to observe it with them. Nor will there ever be wanting to a prince legitimate reasons to excuse this non-observance. In other words, this is just an absolute, absolute case. You can always trust this. He who has best known how to employ the fox has succeeded best. I wonder if Rupert Murdoch was thinking of that when he named it Fox Network. But it is necessary, Machiavelli says 500 years ago, to know how to disguise this characteristic and to be a great pretender and dissembler. And men are so simple and so subject to present necessities that he who seeks to deceive will always find someone who will allow himself to be deceived. Therefore, it is unnecessary for a prince to have all the good qualities I have enumerated, but it is very necessary for him to appear to have them. He must appear merciful, faithful, humane, religious, upright, but with a mind so framed that should you require not to be so, you may be able and know how to change to the opposite. For this reason, a prince ought not to take care that he never lets anything slip from his lips that is not replete with the above five named qualities. In other words, always, whenever you have a speech, be sure that you include these five qualities, that you're merciful, faithful, humane, religious, and upright. That he may appear to him who is not replete with the above named five qualities. Oh, that he may appear to him who sees and hears him altogether, merciful, faithful, humane, upright, and religious. There is nothing more necessary to appear to have than the last quality of religious, inasmuch as men judge generally more by the eye than by the hand, because it belongs to everyone to see you, but few come in touch with you. And then here's the kicker. Everyone sees what you appear to be, but few really know what you are. And those few dare not oppose. Machiavelli, chapter 18, concerning the way in which princes should keep faith. And then finally, our fortresses, this is chapter 20, The Prince, our fortresses and many other things to which princes often resort, advantageous or hurtful. He says, without doubt, princes become great when they overcome the difficulties and obstacles by which they are confronted. And therefore, fortune, especially when she desires to make a new prince great, who has a greater necessity to earn renown than a hereditary one, causes enemies to arise and form designs against him. Now get this. What he's saying is that if a prince wants to be great, fortune will cause enemies to arise and form designs against him, in order that he may have the opportunity of overcoming those enemies, and by them to mount higher, as by a ladder which his opportunities have raised. For this reason, many consider that a wise prince, when he has the opportunity, ought with craft to foster some animosity against himself, so that having crushed it, his renown may rise higher. Bring on an enemy for yourself and then defeat them. Make everybody think that that enemy is powerful and then defeat them. And you will have, as Machiavelli said, your renown will rise higher. So we have this third world backward country that we starved for a decade with sanctions, brought them to their knees. 5,000 children a month dying of, like, malnutrition. A third world country, one of the poorest in the region. We sent inspectors in from 91 to 98 and for several months in 2003 to make sure that these guys have no weapons. So now they're broke, they're poor. We haven't been allowing them to export oil except in exchange for food. They have no weapons. But we've got to make it seem like they're really powerful and really evil because we're about to go to war with them and we're going to defeat them, of course, easily and quickly. It's like breaking both legs of somebody and then saying, how about a fist fight? Right. So we build them up to be terrible, evil folks, great powers, biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons, and then go in and hope that nobody notices. Has this administration committed high crimes and misdemeanors in the pursuit of Machiavelli's principles? You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Aw, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Xie xie is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Fan ji la is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fan ji la.
You know everything.
Xie xie.
I should have watched MSNBC.
You should have.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy
Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
you know, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got to hear.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Is Machiavelli right? Do the ends justify the means? Is it appropriate for leaders to lie to their people because the people themselves are inherently stupid and evil, as Machiavelli suggests? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Beth from California is on the line. Beth, come on in, sit down, and tell us what's on your mind. Welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot. It's great to be on here. I found a speech given by Representative Ron Paul from Texas called Neocon, and in it's a long speech. He goes into a great deal of depth on the neocons and their philosophy, and he goes into the Machiavelli aspects, and I just wanted to let people know that's another resource they can go to if they want to do some research on this stuff.
Okay, so you can find that if you went to Google and typed in Ron Paul and Machiavelli, most likely?
Yeah, it's www.house.gov/Paul.
Yeah, he's one of the few remaining doctrinaire conservatives as opposed to, go which way the wind blows conservatives out there. I mean, you know, Ron Paul.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that that he's a Republican and he wrote up this speech all about the neocons and what
he's doing. Actually to the right of a lot of these guys in many regards. I mean, he's a very, very libertarian conservative. But occasionally he says something really profound, so it's worth paying attention to.
Yeah, this is worth looking into. And I also wanted to mention that in terms of impeachment, I don't think we should impeach either at this point. The guys that ought to be impeached are Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz. We can elect George Bush out of office next year. But
I think we still have some research to do.
Yeah, I watched all the President's Men again recently, and I realized that it took between 1 and 2 years for all of Watergate to unfold. So things happen faster now, but we need to let the process unfold, I think.
This is just the beginning. I agree. Beth, thank you very much for the call. Stay with the Tom Hartman Program. We'll return in just a few minutes. We'll be right back.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those ads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into Tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
News. I'm Monica DeSantis. Mortar shells have reportedly hit the heavily fortified U.S. embassy in the Liberian capital of Monrovia. American military officials say at least three people have been injured. U.S. Marines have flown into Liberia to protect the compound. It comes as fighting continues in the country, with rebels staging another onslaught on the center of the capital. Steve Mort reports.
The U.S. military says it sent 41 Marines to reinforce security at the U.S. embassy and prepare to possibly evacuate American citizens. The measure follows an intensification in fighting between rebels and government forces. The new U.S. arrivals bring the total number of American troops in Liberia to about 70. Dozens of people have been wounded in the latest violence, and at least five were killed on Sunday in a mortar bomb attack just a few hundred meters from the U.S. embassy. President Bush is still deciding whether to send troops to lead a U.N. peacekeeping force for the country. Steve Mort, Washington.
An American soldier and an Iraqi interpreter were killed, and three soldiers were wounded in an attack in Baghdad today. Witnesses reported seeing two Humvees blown up at about the same time, but it was unclear whether the explosions were connected to the fatalities. Over the weekend, four other U.S. troops and an Iraqi driver were killed. There were harsh words directed at Syria and Iran today by President Bush.
Today, Syria and Iran continue to harbor and assist terrorists. This behavior is completely unacceptable, and states that support terror will be held accountable.
Bush spoke during a joint press conference in Crawford, Texas, with Italy's Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. He adds that terrorism undermines peace in the Middle East. On Wall Street this hour, the Dow is down 101 points, the Nasdaq down 29, and the S&P down 15 points.
Hey, Larry, baby, you want to go for a ride?
Why, Vince, I didn't know you cared.
I don't, but I'm looking for a baby.
But, Vince, we're crash dummies.
Well, your head's about the size of a baby.
What are you doing?
Taking it off! I'm using your head in a rear-facing infancy.
Why?
To show how babies up front are an airbag danger.
You know I get sick when I ride backwards and without a body.
Up in front, kids won't know what hit them when the airbag blows.
Then why do people put their kids up front, Vince?
I don't know. Maybe it makes them feel better to see them sitting by their side. Although, if my baby looked like you, he'd ride in the trunk.
And where are we going, Vince?
You know that brick wall with the big bullseye?
I can see it vaguely in the back of my mind.
Well, in 2 seconds, that's exactly where it's going to be. Holy cow, Larry, you're embedded in the seat.
Fire.
I can't understand you. I'll go get a tire iron.
Thank you.
You could learn a lot from a dummy. Buckle your kids in the back seat. A message from the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
The lead prosecutor in the sexual assault case against NBA star Kobe Bryant says he can prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. Bryant, who plays with the L.A. Lakers, is charged with sexually assaulting a 19-year-old in Colorado. Last week he told a press conference he had consensual sex with the woman and never forced anyone to do anything. Lawyers for an Oklahoma City bombing conspirator will try to get state murder charges against their client dismissed today. Attorneys for Terry Nichols are expected to argue the state has no jurisdiction in the case due to the fact the deaths happened on federal property, namely the Murrah Federal Building. If he's tried and convicted of state murder charges, he could face the death penalty.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One-A-Day Men's Health Formula. One-A-Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One-A-Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
The former leader of Boston Area Catholics, Cardinal Bernard Law, will not face criminal charges for his role in the pre-sex abuse scandal. Massachusetts Attorney General Tom Riley concluded that the state's weak child protection laws prevent his office from prosecuting Law and his top aides. One alleged victim of a pedophile priest is disappointed, but he understands.
I think that the civil and the criminal authorities have done probably what they can. And right now, I think Cardinal Law should be concerned about the moral court. And he's got a bigger judge he's going to have to face when he leaves the surf.
Gary Bergeron says the state now has a mandatory reporting law on the books, but he says the $1,000 fine for breaking the law is just not enough. And Russell Crowe expects to add the role of father to his resume. The Oscar-winning actor said he and his wife, Danielle Spencer, are expecting their first child in January. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with another Car Clinic Minute. James Dean, French food, playing hooky. All bad things that are oh so good. But, like the little girl with a curl on her forehead, bad gasoline is horrid. When I come back, I'll tell you why.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. 10 years ago, I discovered a company with the best fuel injector cleaner, BG Products. Now wait, there's more. To do the job right requires cleaning both the fuel and the air induction systems. The process is called BG Complete Induction System Service. If you want your vehicle to run like new, don't settle for anything less. To find a shop near you to perform this service, go to bgfindtheshop.com. That's bgfindtheshop.com.
You may get Crepe Suzette out of your system by exercising, but bad gasoline in your car's system does long-lasting damage. As gasoline evaporates, it deposits harmful sludge which interacts with metals in your car's fuel system, causing gas to go rancid. Stale gas looks cloudy, smells like paint thinner, and gunks up your car's fuel injectors. Like too much French food clogs your arteries. So do what James Dean would. Go heavy on the Bernaise sauce, but keep your tank filled with fresh gas. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live across the United States on the IE America Radio System. IEAmericaRadio.com is the website, broadcasting live on the internet from RadioPower.org and IEAmericaRadio.com, archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can find links to all of this at TomHartmanShow.com, as well as links to our chat room where there's a lively conversation going on, and broadcasting live from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite system, channel 145. Now, this is Tom Hartman from the People's Republic of Vermont. And just remarkable stuff this week, over the last 2 weeks. All of this stuff that's starting to come out now, it's like this unraveling is happening. We'll get to that in just a second. First, a couple of emails. I got one here from Carol. She said, Bush has facts of the day. Bush has succeeded in devastating our treasury and turning a healthy surplus into the biggest deficit in history. As the states go bankrupt, the schools, hospitals, libraries, and other social services have been cut to the bone, and the top 1% of the wealthiest enjoy huge tax cut benefits. Hundreds of American soldiers and thousands of innocent Iraqi civilians are dead as a result of Bush's war, which the UN, the Pope, and most of the world opposed. And ends with some great quotes.
Dissent is the highest form of patriotism by Thomas Jefferson. You fight terrorism by creating more justice in the world from Tommaso Paladini. And Dwight Eisenhower said, here in America, we are descended in blood and in spirit from revolutionists and rebels, men and women who dare to dissent from accepted doctrine. As their heirs, we may never confuse honest dissent with disloyal subversion. And an email from Jim Turr, who says, yes, it would be helpful if progressives could eventually build up an opinion-making machine to rival that of the conservatives. But beyond that, what the Democrats need most is a candidate who's willing to clearly and repeatedly point out the obvious, that the Bush regime is a dangerous, single-minded, corporate-owned cabal at odds with the interests of 95% of Americans, slickly and deceptively dragging us toward a bleak, bankrupt, fundamentalist future. As one of your latter interviewees said, there's nothing wrong with Democrat values and agenda, but they cannot be even heard until the spell of the conservative myth-making machine is broken and their good old boy figurehead exposed for what he is. Gotcha, Jim. And we are doing that here, breaking the right-wing spell, busting up the myths, telling the truth. And every day, 5 days a week on this program and on several others that are carried on this network, by the way. George Bush on 8702, speaking at in Madison, Wisconsin, at a gathering of workers. On 8702, he says, we've got to do more to protect worker pensions. The reality? This is from the House Appropriations Committee. The reality, just 4 months after touting pension security, Bush's Treasury Department announced plans to propose new rules that, according to the Washington Post, quote, would allow employers to resume converting traditional pension plans to new cash balance plans that can lower benefits to long-serving workers. Such conversions are highly controversial. Critics contend that they discriminate against older workers in violation of federal law. But they certainly help the corporations out. Can you hand me back that Machiavelli thing? I had an epiphany this morning. It was something back years ago. I used to live in Atlanta, and Neil Bortz was on the radio down there. Now he's nationally syndicated. And this theme that he used to come back to all the time kind of stuck in my head, that he said the whole basis of Democratic politics, that is big D Democrat politics, as he would say, is that you make people dependent upon the government, and then they will happily vote you back into office. And therefore, the Democrats like Social Security, and they like Medicaid, and they like Medicare, and they like these programs that people like. And that form of we'll help you reelect us politics is some sort of a bad thing in the world of Bortz and the other right-wing ideologues. And suddenly it hit me today, and I don't know why it took so long. I was reading Machiavelli, doing show prep here a couple hours ago, and I read this chapter 9 concerning a civil principality. And we are going to move beyond Machiavelli in this hour. This is the last of it. But anyhow, he says, a wise prince ought to adopt such a course that his citizens will always, in every sort and kind of circumstance, have need of the state and of him, and he will always find them faithful. And I thought, gee, that's the same thing that Bortz was talking about. And here Machiavelli is suggesting this, and Bortz says that this is what the Democrats are up to. Well, you could say, and I think accurately, it's also what the Republicans are up to with regard to those people who can give the largest donations to their political campaigns. And we're going to get to that in just a few minutes here. Bush just this weekend left the ranch Saturday and Sunday, in a headline in today's New York Times. Bush takes a brief break from relaxing at his ranch to rake in $7 million. And President Bush never seems happier or more relaxed than when he is back here at his ranch. But this weekend, unwinding proved particularly profitable. He raised $7 million from Texas Republicans with minimal effort and was whisked back to his own living room by sunset. It's a story by David E. Sanger in a political memo in today's New York Times. And So you could say the Republicans and the Democrats are both doing what Machiavelli said. The Republicans are giving to the rich base, and the Democrats are giving to the poor base. And the reason that this so sticks in the craws of right-wing talk show hosts is that the poor base is larger than the rich base in America. But what hit me this morning was that it goes beyond that. It goes beyond it on either level. If we really want to think about this in the context of what is a democratic republic, how does a democracy work? What is the purpose of it? Why did we create this thing in the first place? And what's its purpose? What's the purpose of government? And it occurred to me, if somebody is not dependent upon government, that is, they don't look to government for their security, then where do they look? My wife's grandmother, who just died a year or so ago at the age of 95, had this farm in Michigan that Louise used to spend the summers at. And grandma literally would go into town twice a year to buy salt and flour, and that was it. She bought two dresses from Sears every year by mail order. But other than that, she was independent. She grew all her own food. I believe that she produced much of her own power, wood. And so it is possible, I suppose, to be independent. You know, Helen and Scott Nearing sort of created that ideal. And there certainly is that meme out there of people who want to go back to the land and be self-sufficient. But that might be 1/1,000th of 1% of the population of the United States. The rest of us have basically two choices for our long-term security, particularly as old age faces us. But throughout our lives, if disaster happens, if somebody gets cancer, God forbid, or in a car accident, or, you know, some loses their job and there simply is not another employer available. And that is that we can turn to government to provide Social Security, literally, with low S, small S, or we can turn to private corporations or the wealthy. And so when the cons are saying the Democrats only want to give away social programs because they want to buy votes, what they're really saying is, but what we want is that people should be living in terror and fear so that they will do the bidding of the corporate masters. Because those are the only two alternatives. And people are beginning to realize in America now, as they realized in 1929. See, we had forgotten from the Gilded Age right up until 1929 the same lesson. And people got whack right in the face, the Great Depression. And after 2 years of that, they booted Herbert Hoover out of office, who kept saying, oh, don't worry, business will take care of everything. Just turn to the free market. They'll save us. And people eventually realized, no, you know, government, we created government in the United States for a purpose. There's a reason why we created this thing. It has a very specific reason for its existence. Let me just find here. It was stated right up front by the founders. Read the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility. Now, I'm going to interrupt myself here. Interestingly, I remember watching a couple of weeks ago Donald Rumsfeld on TV, and they were saying, well, what about, you know, this mess you've got in Iraq right now? And he said, well, you know, after the American Revolution, there was chaos and there was looting and you know, people, and there was snipers and they were shooting at people. Turns out he's dead wrong. Great article in the New York Times this week. It was also reprinted on commondreams.org by a historian, I believe at New York University, about what happened in 1787 after the end of the Revolutionary War in America. About 100,000 people left. They said, I'm loyal to the crown. I'm out of here. Many of them went to Canada. Some of them went to the Caribbean. The majority of them went back to England. There was no looting. None. There were no snipers. There was no ongoing guerrilla warfare. None. Donald Rumsfeld either is badly misinformed about American history, or he just overtly lied to the American people in that interview. One or the other. So anyhow, the founders, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, which they did, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare. Promote the general welfare. In other words, to be there when necessary, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. And people say, well, but wait a minute, there was no social welfare system in 1776. Well, the world was a very different place back then, and most people actually were self-sufficient, like Louisa's grandmother. And there was so much land being taken from the Indians that it was possible for anybody who wasn't to become that way. Not the case anymore. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people. Stay with us. I'll be right back.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I didn't think that was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is my
like Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not get something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Did you ever take a walk through the forest? Stop and dream a while among the trees. Well, you can look up through the leaves right straight to heaven. And you can almost hear the voice of God in each and every breeze. But you got to stop.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, where one of our own, Ms. Nancy Skinner, is running for the United States Senate from Illinois. SkinnerTheWinner.com is her website. Go, Nancy, go! And on Tuesday, tomorrow, we're going to have Diane Alden, a conservative pundit, who's going to tell us why the Patriot Act is a wonderful thing. And Mark Carlin, the founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com. On Wednesday, Joe Trippi at noon will be with us, the campaign manager for Howard Dean's campaign. It's your chance to ask questions and learn more about Dean. And Thursday, Joanne Doroshow, who's going to talk, Center for Justice and Democracy, is going to talk about tort reform, one of the biggest public PR scams, public relations scams in history. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Linda from Cupertino, California is on the line. Linda, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. You were speaking about the neocons and all that. I've got a fascinating email from friends in an activist group in Florida, and they sent me this email which says 3 minutes to understand the conservatives and how to fight against them. Mm-hmm. And their idea is that all of conservative ideology is based upon the need for cheap labor. So
yeah.
They said, why not start using this phrase from now on? Every time you hear of big government liberals talk about cheap labor, conservatives.
Yes.
And did you ever see this, by the way?
I did. In fact, I did a show on it.
On that one tip sheet
on the website that they're pointing to. Yeah, I did a program on that about a week or two ago.
Well,
and it's a great website. I know you can't listen to every hour.
I wish I could, and I wish I could be caught up on everything, but I think that this is so good that it should be initiated inside DNC party strategy.
Yeah,
I always called conservatives tax cut tax borrow and spend conservatives, as opposed to tax and spend liberals. And I think that cut tax borrow and spend conservatives are doing a lot more damage than tax and spend liberals ever did.
Well, and to call them borrow and tax conservatives is kind of weak because they're borrowing and they're taxing and they're spending, but that's not the core of their ideology. The core of their ideology is the conservatives correctly identify the liberal ideology as being that government has legitimacy. The government has an appropriate place in our life. The government needs to be regulating commerce. The government needs to be regulating the commons. That's the reason why we created government. And liberals agree on that. Where the liberals have failed to correctly identify the conservatives is that they haven't identified them as essentially the party of the exploitation of labor.
Yeah.
The cheap labor, and the cheap labor is the way
Very
to say it.
True.
I mean, everybody understood this during the populist revolt.
Yeah. But I'm going to start using that phrase from now on.
Yeah, and I need to more often. Thanks for the reminder, Linda.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. That's a good one. Yes, the cheap labor conservatives. In fact, I should have before Linda before we dropped her there. I should have gotten the URL for that website. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but we'll
dig see if you
out.
Can look it up. And,
oh, you're still
and give
on
it in the next show. Yeah, I'm still here.
Well, Linda, do you have the website for
No, I don't. I have it at home.
Okay.
So
yeah,
I don't have it.
There's a great website that has the whole thing all laid out.
Yes, I haven't even seen it. I just looked at the email from my friends in Florida.
Yeah, well, you can also, you know, you can post things to the message board. If you go to TomHartman.com or TomHartmanShow.com,
mm-hmm.
there's a message board that we have that, mm-hmm. You know, regularly posts. There's about 20,000 messages on it right now. And broken down into categories, and you can start a thread, and you can post that information on it.
I will.
So,
great.
Thank you, Linda.
Thanks.
I appreciate the call and appreciate the information. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
The countdown's officially begun for a strike at Verizon Communications. 80,000 workers represented by two unions have overwhelmingly approved a strike to begin August 2nd unless a new contract is hammered out before then. The company and unions are far apart on several issues. One of the most contentious is Verizon's demand that it have the flexibility to reassign workers at will. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and Communications Workers of America both suspect Verizon would use this new power to stack most of its East Coast workforce in states with the lowest wage and weakest labor laws. Verizon and the unions begin bargaining today in New York.
Talks between the United Auto Workers and the big three car makers are barely underway, and things are already getting ugly. Last weekend, Ford Motor Company announced it'll lay off as many as 2,000 white-collar employees in a bid to cut costs, suggesting it'll also push its blue-collar workers for major concessions at the bargaining table. Meanwhile, General Motors announced it will hold on to $13 billion in cash it raised recently through the sale of corporate bonds. The money was supposed to help shore up GM's woefully underfunded pension fund, but now the automaker says it'll retain the money until contract talks are completed. The company denies it's holding on to the cash as leverage against a strike.
A federal judge in Kentucky has tossed out a $10 billion lawsuit filed on behalf of 10,000 workers at the U.S. government's uranium enrichment plant in Paducah. Some of the workers are dead. Many are dying due to what they say was unlawful exposure to radioactive toxins during their work at the plant. But while Judge Joseph McKinley sympathizes with those who are suffering, federal law gives the plant and its former operators, Lockheed Martin and Union Carbide, special immunity from such suits. The dismissal is already on appeal.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
As
As the son of a sailor, I went out on the sea for adventure, expanding the view of the captain and crew like a man just released from indenture.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. The South Gahawa Area Development, Core Gas Venture Number 1, completion date not available, cost not available, capacity not available, companies, Total, Fina, Elf, ExxonMobil, Shell, British Petroleum, Chevron, Texaco, ENI, Phillips. Red Sea Area Development, Gas Core Venture Number 2, completion date not available, cost not available, capacity not available, company, Total, Fina, Elf, ExxonMobil, Shell, Conoco, Enron, Occidental, Marathon. These, here we go, potential suitors, foreign suitors for Iraqi oil. I'm reading to you from the documents that were by lawsuit extracted by Judicial Watch from the Dick Cheney Energy Task Force meeting held in 2001 before 9/11. And I quote from the top of the page, foreign suitors for Iraqi oil field contracts. Well, it says Algeria, Sastrach, in the Touba area, blocks 6 and 7, under discussions, collecting data. Australia, BHP, the Halfaya, block 6. These are regions of Iraq. There's a huge map of all the oil fields. There must be 100 oil fields on this thing, and they all have names. These are the names. And Belgium, Petrofina is the company that is the firm that is a potential suitor for the Iraqi oil in Belgium. And they're looking at parceling out the Adhab Block 2 region to them. In Canada, they're talking to Ranger or looking at Ranger, Bow Canada, Alberta Energy, CanOxy, Shaw, Fondisco, Talisman, PC, and they break out all the different oil regions. They have, with the exception of American oil companies from Russia, South Korea, Samsung, Pedco, Hambo, Spain, Repsol, Taiwan, CPC, Turkey, TPAO, Malaysia, Petronas, Mexico, Pemex, the Netherlands, Larmag, and Dutch Royal Shell. In the UK, Branch Energy and Pacific Resources. They have all these different oil companies around the world as foreign suitors for Iraqi oil field contracts. This is what Dick Cheney was working on in his private and secret energy meetings in 2001 before 9/11. Is this why we declared war on Iraq? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Tim in Hartford, Connecticut is on the line. Tim, welcome to the program.
Just a couple of things, a little bit. So you're a very difficult man to email, by the way.
Really?
I don't know the spelling of your name. I've tried 20 different ways, and it all keeps coming back. So
Let me tell you. It's T-H-O-M, Tom, at T-H-O-M, Hartman, H-A-R-T-M-A-N-N.com. That's my email address. It comes right to me.
Oh, it's just maybe I put too many M's on Tom. I don't know.
Yeah, it must be.
But the other thing is,
every page on my website has it on it, by the way, if you just click on the contact link.
By the way, I went to Nancy Skinner's website. She needs a little more content to that. By the way, is she taking herself off the air? Because everybody who declares for federal office, they don't allow them generally to be on any type of broadcast medium.
Right. She's no longer doing her own program on IE America Radio. She was on Doug Skinner's program this morning, on Doug Steffen's program, and I think she's still doing the show with Ski Anderson in Chicago on WLS. I really don't know the details of that, and you'd have to ask her.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting because I know a lot of broadcasters who have run for office in different capacities, and they almost immediately yanked them off the air because of the Well, I take that back. There used to be a rule called the equal time provision, but with the destruction of the political process by both the Democrats and Republicans, who knows what the rules are as far as that is concerned? I mean,
well, and in fact, speaking of the broadcast rules, I got a great story for you, Tim. When we finish here, I'll read it on the air after we're done with the call, specifically about what are the rules under the FCC. And we have a new Berlusconi alert to go along with it. But anyhow, what was your comment or question?
No, I was just talking about the cheap labor conservatives. And was that Bill Clinton and Al Gore?
Yeah, I would put Bill Clinton and Al Gore in the category of moderate conservatives.
The moderate conservatives?
Yeah, and in as much as they were relatively pro-environment, but they certainly were pro-cheap labor. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton mm-hmm. worked very, very hard to get for the passage of NAFTA and GATT, an act for which I will not forgive him.
Well, and now I see that the Teamsters are also very concerned about more free trade agreements to South America, and it just keeps kind of going on and on. You know, it's the sleepy yep. Democrats, you know, are just like, you know, kind of once again, whether they're taking labor for granted, thinking that they'll only, you know, stay with them. And the Teamsters are like one group that's talked about bolting. You know, it all depends. We used to talk about the working people, the working class and jobs around here. You know, we've been so distracted by this horrific war situation that I'm just very concerned about, you know, these issues just flying underneath the radar screen. None of the presidential candidates are talking about them.
Yeah, they changed the subject very effectively. I wrote a piece about that on Common Dreams way back just before the vote was taken to attack Iraq back in 2002, before the 2002 election, suggesting that the whole Iraq thing was a way of diverting people's attention. It was called the magic trick of war, as I recall. People's attention away from labor issues, the economy, the environment, all these other areas where Bush was so weak, and I absolutely agree with you. And I would encourage you, by the way, on Wednesday at noon, we're going to have Joe Trippi on, who is the campaign manager for the Dean campaign, and I would encourage you to drop in, you know, call the show and ask him his thoughts on that and what Dean's position is on all this stuff, because I'd love to hear the answer to that.
You know, terrible stances on things like the death penalty and other issues, and refusal to, you know, take up a Canadian-style single-payer system certainly won't get my vote. And as he becomes, you know, the Bill Clinton of the next election, it'd just be very interesting to see. I still maintain, you know, he is going to be one of the most disappointing candidates to the liberal cause out there. Once people understand his real record, the flash will soon be over.
Yeah, it may well be. I still think it'll, you know, he'd be better than Bush. But there are some significant areas where I disagree with Howard Dean. On the other hand, there are a lot of areas where I think he's great. But I can, you know, from my point of view right now, anybody but Bush. But Tim, thanks for the call. I appreciate you taking the time to ring in, and hope we hear back from you on Wednesday. Berlusconi alert today. Silvio Berlusconi, the new president of the European Union, the prime minister of Italy, the richest man in Italy, and according to Italian prosecutors, he got that way by corruption and bribery, and the owner of six of the seven television and radio networks in Italy. The only remaining one that he doesn't own is owned by the state itself. He showed up late this afternoon. George Bush showed up late this afternoon. The New York Times says today, this is yesterday's story, to greet Italy's embattled prime minister, Silvio Berlusconi, as he landed on the president's helicopter pad for an overnight visit. Mr. Berlusconi was one of the few European supporters of the war in Iraq. Berlusconi is virulently right-wing. He's just like right there almost with Mussolini. And his visit here underscored the fact that France's President Jacques Chirac and Germany's Chancellor Gerhard Schröder, who opposed American efforts to build a broader coalition, are not likely to find themselves dining under the stars in Crawford anytime soon. So what would happen in a nation where another Berlusconi owned the whole show? Excuse me. On February 14th, this from the SierraTimes.com by Mike Gatti, on February 14th, a Florida appeals court ruled there is absolutely nothing illegal about lying, concealing, or distorting information by a major press organization. The court reversed the $425,000 jury verdict in favor of journalist Jane Aker, who charged she was pressured by Fox Television management and lawyers to air what she knew and documented to be false information. The ruling basically declares it is technically not against any law, rule, or regulation to deliberately lie or distort the news on a television broadcast. Fox argued from the first and failed on three separate occasions in front of three different judges to have the case tossed out on the grounds that there was no hard, fast, written rule against deliberate distortion of the news. See, back on August 18th of 2000, a six-person jury was unanimous in its conclusion that Jane Aker was indeed fired for threatening to report the station's pressure to broadcast what jurors decided was a false, distorted, or slanted story about the widespread use of growth hormone in dairy cows. So Fox says, you know, there's no rule that says we can't lie. The attorneys of Fox, owned by media baron Rupert Murdoch, argued the First Amendment gives broadcasters the right to lie or deliberately distort news reports on the air, on the public airwaves. In its six-page written decision, the Court of Appeals held that the federal communications position against news distortion, there actually is an FCC rule that says you can't do this, is, quote, only a policy, not a promulgated law, rule, or regulation, end quote. Fox aired a report after the ruling saying it was totally vindicated by the verdict. Not unlike Silvio Berlusconi's way of handling the news in Italy, one of the most biased media institutions or states out there. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Woody in Beaumont, Texas is on the line. Woody, welcome to the show. Come on in, pull up a chair.
Hey, Tom, enjoying your program as usual.
Well, thank you.
I just love that story you just read. You know, it doesn't really surprise me. God, if there was a law against distorting the news, CBS, NBC, and ABC would be out of business.
Okay.
They'd be sued to death every week. That's not what it's called.
Yeah, I think everybody's ox gets gored ultimately by the networks and the news reporting. It's pretty hard to define what is truth, you know.
You know, talking about cheap labor.
Yeah.
You know, I am what's classified as an exempt employee, which means I am exempt from the protections of the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. That means every day I'm out here just flying, you know, by wires. I got no protection whatsoever. I can be fired for any reason or no reason whatsoever. I can be worked 150 hours a week, and there's no protection against me. My employer could, you know, just make the most unreasonable demands of me, and I have, you know, I can either do it or find someplace else to work.
Right.
But at the same time, I'd be willing to bet that my income is significantly higher than the vast majority of the people working in this country. And I guess that's the point. And let me say also, I don't have the benefit of a college education. I've just, you know, kind of done it all, pulled myself up by my bootstraps and worked real hard in my life and continue to work very hard to make something out of my life. And I understand that I don't have any protections whatsoever. It's just the way it is. And I guess my point is, what is cheap labor? What makes labor cheap? Is it somebody who's working for an hourly wage doing menial or repetitive work, or some people call it name tag business? You have to wear a name tag, you know, to go to work, things like that. You know, if you don't want to be included in the cheap labor market or classified as cheap labor, don't you think that it's really up to you to do something in your life to affect a change that would put you into another category?
I agree. I agree, Woody. And we have to add that there are not that many people in this country who have the ability or the background, and like you said, it doesn't require a college education, who have the ability or the background to change their station as well. I mean, there are folks who basically started working in factories right out of high school, and then the factories go off to Mexico or off to China, and you know, what are they going to do? I would say, you ask, what is cheap labor? What defines cheap labor is supply and demand. It's very simple. And in fact, Greenspan has been on the record so many times about this that Charles Kelly wrote an entire book about it called Class Warfare in America. And in saying that the purpose of the Fed is really to control unemployment, that we need to keep unemployment above a certain level, that is, keep unemployment high enough that workers feel, to quote Greenspan, insecure, end quote, so that they will be willing to work for progressively lower and lower wages. And we've seen this essentially ever since Greenspan took over, and in fact under the reign of his predecessor as well, basically since the late 70s, early 1980s, basically since 1980 with Ronald Reagan. We have seen this as the official policy of the Labor Department and of the Fed, is that we want to increasingly tighten the labor market, that is, decrease the number of jobs available so that people are more and more insecure and therefore more and more willing to work harder and harder for less and less money. And that's why real wages have steadily declined in the United States when you factor out inflation ever since 1978.
Do you think that the minimum wage does more harm than good? When you say, for this job, you know, you must pay this wage, and this is the minimum that you can pay, you know, that actually, to me, gives an employer an excuse to pay less. And just like you say, where demand drives the market. Now, we look at everything that happens in the United States.
Well, no, hang on just a second. I'd say that's why the minimum wage should be a livable wage. And then,
well,
yeah, employers would have an excuse to pay that. But,
as
Teddy Roosevelt,
you may have an economic downturn in some areas. Other areas may be booming. I've seen just a few years ago where McDonald's was paying $8, $9 an hour in San Antonio, where I used to live, because there was a shortage of people, you know?
Yeah, but even at $8 or $9 an hour, it's not a livable wage.
Well, I agree, but for a high school kid, it's pretty good bucks. And let's face it, how are those jobs typically filled?
Well, they used to be filled by high school kids when you and I were kids. I worked in a Henry's hamburger shop when I was 15 years old, but they're not increasingly now. Increasingly now, those jobs are being filled by people who are actually trying to keep their families together, who are trying to put bread on the table of a family.
Well, then, for us to pay a higher wage on those types of jobs, everybody out here has got to be willing to pay more for that Big Mac.
That's right. That Big Mac might cost 15 cents more, and I'd say that that's a cost that society should appropriately bear, because the whole point of allowing McDonald's to do business in America and produce Big Macs is that there has to be some social benefit to it. That's why we, the people, put together this Constitution and said we're going to enable government, we're going to enable business to function, but it has to play by these rules.
Well, I wouldn't have any problem paying the extra 15 cents, but I don't know about the rest of America.
Yeah, well...
All right, Tom, appreciate your time, buddy.
Thanks a lot for the call. Have a good one now. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned to the Tom Hartman Program. I'll return in just a few moments.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it? You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
Tuck, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express lawsuit funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
Show.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him, okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Ugly
weapon. They flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Report on U.S. anti-terrorism law, says the New York Times today, identifies accusations of abuses. And we're going to be talking actually about this at more length tomorrow with a conservative who's coming on to defend the Patriot Act. And here we have this article by Philip Shannon, who says a report by internal investigators at the Justice Department has identified dozens of recent cases in which department employees have been accused of serious civil rights and civil liberties violations involving enforcement of the sweeping federal anti-terrorism law known as the USA Patriot Act. The Inspector General report is likely to raise new concerns about whether the Justice Department can police itself under the 2001 law. They point out that the six-month period that ended in June 15, this is just looking at a six-month window that ended June 15, there were 34 complaints of civil rights and civil liberties violations by department employees that it considered credible. The report also said that credible accusations were made against employees of the FBI, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and the Immigration and Naturalization Service, as well as, the Bureau of Prisons. So, can they police themselves? Is it raising serious questions about whether the Justice Department can police itself? I think history shows, when we look back at the abuses during the civil rights and anti-war era, of the United States law by the police agencies, the FBI, and by the Nixon administration in particular, although LBJ was no civil libertarian either in many regards, that the founders were right when they said, number one, we want to create a government that is us. It is of, by, and for we the people and all that sort of thing. We want to create a good, strong government. But on the other hand, we also want to have protections built into this so that we the people can protect ourselves from that government, which was the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights was very explicit and in there for a good, solid reason. Thanks for joining us this week. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on,
there.
This is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Erica Kane. Mortar shells have reportedly hit the heavily fortified U.S. Embassy in the Liberian capital of Monrovia. American military officials say at least 3 people have been injured. U.S. Marines have flown into Liberia to protect the compound, as Steve Mort reports.
The U.S. military says it sent 41 Marines to reinforce security at the U.S. Embassy and prepare to possibly evacuate American citizens. The measure follows an intensification in fighting between rebels and government forces. The new U.S. arrivals bring the total number of American troops in Liberia to about 70. Dozens of people have been wounded in the latest violence, and at least 5 were killed on Sunday in a mortar bomb attack just a few hundred meters from the U.S. Embassy. President Bush is still deciding whether to send troops to lead a U.N. peacekeeping force for the country. Steve Mort, Washington.
Lawyers for Terry Nichols will try to get state murder charges against their client dropped. Nichols is already serving a life sentence for his role.